All right, we are continuing Treasures in Heaven this morning. A little bit of a different kind of a sermon, but it's going to be okay. I promise it will make sense as we go through it. I want to remind everybody, before we begin, that we have new assisted listening. Is that what it's called? Assisted listening devices. We have a set of four right now. We are working, some people asked this morning, we are working on integrating it with your phone. You can just have a little app and plug in your own headphones. We're having some technical issues with that. But there are four devices that you could use. I know one of them's in use at least, or two maybe right now. I would encourage you, if you're going to use those, bring your own headphones. The ones that came with them, they work, but they're not very comfortable. So if you see people in the assembly with headphones on, that's probably what they're doing. They're not just listening to their own music during the sermon. So just be aware of that. There are still, I think we have two more available, so just be aware of that. Matthew 6, 19 through 21, as we are continuing this series this morning. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is our key text for this series. This is, I think, the fifth lesson in this series, as we've considered a number of different personal values. That's what we're thinking about, right? Where your treasure is, that is, where are the things you value, the things you consider to be important, that's where your heart is. Now, it's interesting, and I've said this before, but the most interesting thing about this text is the order of the last verse. It's not where your heart is, there your treasure is. Because what you value comes first, and that leads you to action. What you care about, the treasures, the things you prioritize, that's what leads you to feel the way you feel, to do the things you do, to say the things you say. So a key part of our struggle is transforming our values, the things that we care about. Now, we've considered thus far, we talked about loving the truth, valuing people, cherishing the church, which is just a subset of people, right? Today, we're going to shift focus slightly as we combine elements of these three things into a broader discussion of purpose and legacy. These are the two key words for this sermon. Purpose and legacy. Most people eventually, probably not at the beginning of our lives, but eventually, we start to think about these things. What's my purpose in life? What sort of legacy am I going to leave? What of my life? And I have there, as we think about people, but we should be phrasing it in the first person. What of my life will survive me? I'm sure many of you have thought about that question. Did I build anything of value? Now, usually we might think about these questions maybe typically at the end of our lives, but the earlier we start thinking about these, the more we can affect this question, right? The more we can affect what these will ultimately be. What was the point of all this? What is the point of what I'm doing now? Purpose and legacy. We are seeking purpose. Everybody is seeking a purpose, whether you know it or not. And a lot of our discontent in our lives comes when we either don't know what our purpose is or our purpose is not satisfying. When we center our purpose on things that will not outlive us, temporary earthly things, then we're depriving ourselves of important meaning, meaning in our lives. Did my life mean anything? This is the central struggle. We're going to read a lot of passages from Ecclesiastes this morning. This is the central struggle of the book of Ecclesiastes. Of course, this is Solomon, I think, the richest and wisest man. I don't think these things. I'm pretty sure Solomon wrote the book. He's called the preacher, but the way he's described, the richest and wisest man in, I don't know, the richest man in history, but definitely the wisest man in history. He struggled with this because he let his heart wander from God. So even Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, probably the richest person in the history of Israel, even he, at the end of his life, struggled with these questions. What was the point? What did I build? Will anything outlast me? What's my legacy going to be? And so the divide between treasures in heaven and treasures on earth, which is at the core of Matthew 6, right? Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal. That's at the heart of our purpose and meaning in life. What you prioritize and care about and value is going to determine your purpose and your legacy. Now, Jesus is very clear about why treasures on earth are not a satisfying purpose. These will not build a lasting legacy. Why? Well, let's read a couple of verses. Of course, the thing that this was the scripture reading for us, Luke 12, 13 through 21. I'm going to begin a few verses earlier. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man," I like this phrase. He says this to his mother too. When his mom asks him about the wine at the wedding, right? Oh, they've run out of wine. And he says, "Woman, what is that to do with me?" Here he says the same thing. "Man, who made me judge over you?" I have this phrase in my mind or intonation about this. I don't know how he said it, of course. And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Now, he would say that, of course, because they're wanting the inheritance. More possessions for me is what this guy's thinking. Tell my brother to divide the inheritance. He's being selfish. I want more stuff. Now, it is fair, of course, probably, that the guy would divide the inheritance. I don't know, though. That's at the discretion of, they had the concept of a will, so maybe the father did not do that, and that was at the father's discretion because it was his stuff. Of course, we're going to talk about, I don't want to get too far ahead. And he told them a parable saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully," and he thought to himself, "What shall I do?" I always think about this guy, I don't know, as I always do as British, but "What shall I do? I have nowhere to store my crops." And what a horrible problem to have. Oh man, I have too much stuff. What am I going to do with all my stuff? My riches, I'm so rich. I have nothing to do with all my riches. I'm too wealthy. What a problem. Now, as a side note, the question that Jesus asks, "Man, who made me judge and arbitrator over you?" Of course, what's the answer to that question? The Father? Now, of course, he's talking about maybe in these mundane human realms. He's not here to judge these minor, I say minor. He's not here to judge these very earthly disputes between people. But at the end of the day, he is the judge and arbitrator, right? He is the one who has that power. We keep reading. He said, "I will do this." This is the man in the parable. "I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. I've got so much stuff, I've got to build more storage. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years.'" I'm ready to retire, is what he's saying, right? "Relax, eat, drink, and be merry." Keep that phrase in mind. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. That phrase comes up half a dozen times in Ecclesiastes. We'll come back to that. "And God said to him, 'Fool.'" That phrase, that word, again, very important in the writings of Solomon. "But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things that you have prepared, whose will they be?'" What's the answer? It's not yours. And in the parable, as it relates to the people there, right? The father, whoever it was that built up this thing, his stuff went to his sons. And what are his sons doing? They're arguing about it. "Jesus, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Well, the father doesn't have anything to do with that. He's dead and gone, which is the point of the parable. "So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." Again, we're seeing similar language here to the Sermon on the Mount, right? Which is Matthew 6. Treasure and rich for ourselves or toward God. Where are your priorities? What do you care about? What do you spend your time doing? What do you spend your effort on, your energy on, your time on? This guy in the parable, he's all focused on his stuff. "I'm going to spend all my energy on my stuff. I've got too much stuff. I've got to build more storage for my stuff." That's his treasure. And so why are earthly values less important than spiritual ones? Because they end when you die. 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 10. "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing with these, we'll be content. But those who desire to be rich will fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs." The bold and underlined part is the key, right? Why are treasures on earth not as good as treasures in heaven? because you can't take them with you. It all ends. And it's going to go to somebody else. Thus, if we want a truly satisfying purpose to our lives, if we want to build something that lasts, we have to value things that will endure. Right? We have to value things that will last beyond death. The core of these treasures in heaven, as we've already discussed, are valuing people, right? People whose souls will endure, because people are eternal. Your body's not eternal, but your soul is eternal. Your soul will continue. Loving the truth. The truth is eternal. It just exists. And it's not going to be any less true in heaven. It's going to be just as true. And it's the thing that will help us endure in heaven, right? Cherishing the church. These people here, these are the people I'm going to see in heaven. I hope so. I hope I see you in heaven. I would like to see you in heaven. That's my goal as a preacher, right? And our goal as Christians should be that these are the people I'm going to spend eternity with. And while we will continue in the series to talk about these individual things we should value, it's important to see the benefit of shifting our values, the benefit of transforming what we care about, of laying up treasures in heaven, is we can avoid the aimless struggle of Solomon. Let's read about his struggle in Ecclesiastes. We're going to read a number of verses out of Ecclesiastes about the vanity of earthly treasure. Vanity or useless, depending on your translation, is the key word of Ecclesiastes. Vanity or useless or meaningless. Something that does not have any purpose or value. Something that doesn't accomplish anything. That's the meaning of the word vanity, right? Ecclesiastes 1, 2 through 3, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It's all meaningless. What does a man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? And of course, as we read through Ecclesiastes, his implied answer is nothing. Man doesn't gain anything. 2, 1 and 2, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. What did Jesus say about the guy in the parable? Eat, drink, and be merry. I'm ready to retire. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it's mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? The first couple chapters of Ecclesiastes are the preacher, who again I think is Solomon, trying a bunch of different stuff. He tries money. He tries possessions. He tries architecture and building things. He tries pleasure. He tries all these earthly sort of physical sensations. He tries learning. Trying to find some purpose and meaning in life. These are the treasures that he's storing up. And all of them led to the conclusion, everything's meaningless. 2:18 through 19. I hated my toil, in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. All these things he spent his time acquiring weren't going to be his. He had them for, I don't know, let's say he started as an adult, right? Because he grew up. Of course, he had a lot of stuff as a kid, being the son of David. But let's say he starts really thinking about this at age 30. How long is he going to enjoy the things that he's spent his life accumulating? I don't know, maybe 50 years? At a good age, 50 years. But I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. We know he was a fool, the guy who came after Solomon. We know that. Because that's the most likely outcome, right? The most likely outcome is that whoever acquires your possessions after you will not follow the narrow way, the way that leads to life. Now, just statistically, maybe you're controlling it and maybe you've raised your kids well and you think, yes, my kids are going to do well with the things that I have and the things that I've built, the legacy I've built. My kids are going to do with it the things that need to be done. But ultimately, you have no control over that. Government's going to take some portion of it, maybe. Yet he, this other person, will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This is vanity. Solomon could not handle the fact that everything he strived so hard for in life wasn't going to be his forever. 3:18 through 21. And I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man is what happens to the beasts of the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath. A man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. Might as well be an animal. What do animals do? They care about instinct. They're just trying to survive, have kids, procreate, just eat and sleep and poop, and that's all they're doing. Man's no better, says Solomon. We have no advantage. We all die in the end. What's the point? Very nihilistic. All go to one place. Here we see Solomon's error, don't we? All are from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of beast goes down to the earth? This, we see, is the error of Solomon. Who knows? I know. I know. Jesus knows. We all know, don't we? What happens to the soul of man and beast? Solomon was lacking in crucial knowledge and faith that we now have. And maybe he could have figured it out. I don't know. The rest of the people of his day, I'm sure they didn't have these same existential dread. David didn't seem to have this existential dread. You think about all the righteous people in Israel's history, they didn't have any of this existential dread. Solomon, he's overthinking it. He's missed the point. He's so wrapped up in building this legacy and purpose for his life that is based on things that don't matter, that he's missing what does matter. He doesn't get it. So what? This is a motivational sermon, I hope. Not an instructional one necessarily. Why should we care about personal values? Why should we lay up treasures in heaven? Why does it matter what I do with my life? What I care about? Can't I just live my life the way I want to live? If you do what Jesus says and lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, if you do what Paul says and are transformed by the renewal of your mind, which encompasses a lot of things, but also what we care about, our priorities, if you do that, it will satisfy the deepest yearning of your soul. You can have a purpose that will outlive yourself. That phrasing's a little bit weird, because nothing's going to outlive you, because you're eternal. So when we say that, what do we mean? A purpose that will transcend the physical. Your 80 years on earth. That's your earthly life. But your spiritual soul, the core being, the essence of your very existence, will last forever. So the purpose that we decide to build our lives around needs to be centered on that, the eternal part of us, and not this, which will last at best 100 years. I think I read something the other day about somebody that lived to 110. Pretty long, but not really. 110 compared to eternity, it's basically nothing. The value of this, the value of having a meaningful, lasting purpose in your life cannot be understated. Because everything in our lives flows out of our purpose. When we enter this malaise or depression or we get discouraged, a lot of times it's because we know, either subconsciously or consciously, we know that the things we're doing in life don't matter. We know that what we're building our life around is not meaningful. It's not going to last. And we trick ourselves into thinking that building up all of this physical stuff is going to satisfy that deepest part of my soul, and it won't. Because you know, whether you've thought about it or not, you know you're going to die. And we trick ourselves into not thinking about it. But you know that everything you're building toward will end. And the sooner we bring that to the forefront of our conscience, the sooner we realize that there's a way around this problem, and that is to focus on things that are eternal, the sooner we can get to the business of having a satisfying purpose. Why are people the treasure in heaven? Because people, the way we affect people's souls, is the thing that will last forever. So when you focus your efforts on teaching the lost, you know that that effort will have eternal payoff. And you're going to be with those people and reap the rewards of that literally forever. As opposed to all the earthly stuff we enjoy, not even for 80 years. Because, you know, my health is going to decrease and then I can't enjoy my life as much. And what does Jesus say? Moth and rust destroys and thieves break in and steal. All the stuff I built, that's going to break someday or get lost or stolen or taken or misused. Solomon, the preacher, didn't find the meaning he sought. He concluded, again, half a dozen times in the book of Ecclesiastes. We're not going to read them, but you can read them on your own in Ecclesiastes. He determined that what mattered was to eat, drink, and be merry in life. Just going to enjoy my life. That's what God gave us to do. This is the opposite conclusion that Jesus drew, right? When Jesus tells that parable, soul, I'm set up for life. Eat, drink, and enjoy. And what does God immediately turn around and say to that guy? Fool. An appropriate translation of that would be idiot. You are focused so much on enjoying life. And tonight, you're going to die. Now, I don't know that you're going to die tonight, but you might. And we don't like to think about that. I know, it's uncomfortable. Sorry for bringing it to your mind. But the way to change your values, one of the ways, is to think more about death. And Solomon says this in the book of Ecclesiastes. He does get this kind of right. Better is the house of mourning, a funeral home, than the house of joy. Because at least those who are thinking at the funeral home are thinking about eternal things, thinking about consequences and lasting legacy. Solomon's musings were left for Israel. I think about Israel as they're collecting. Later on, Ecclesiastes was not compiled in the time of Solomon, compiled sometime after his death. And you can see this as you go through Ecclesiastes. There are sections that are written by, it seems to be an editor, a compiler. And why God inspired that was to show Israel and to show us the result of a life devoted to treasures on earth. The result is what? Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. That will be the end result of building up treasures on earth. But in the end, the editor, the compiler of Solomon's writings, Israel was reminded that there is a different conclusion to what Solomon reached. The conclusion, eat, drink, and be merry. Who knows what's going to happen to the soul? Might as well not be any better than an animal. That's what Solomon concluded. But the editor of Ecclesiastes, and God, I think, inspired him at the end of the book to include this because Solomon was wrong. This is the proper conclusion. Ecclesiastes 12, 13 through 14. The end of the matter, all has been heard. You've read all the stuff of Solomon, now including all the Proverbs, right? He has so many Proverbs. The end of the matter is not his conclusion, but this. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. Because that's what's going to last forever, right? That's what's going to last eternally, right? For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. And I don't know if Israel understood. There's some vagueness about the afterlife in the Old Testament. So maybe the compiler's thinking about God bringing it into judgment in this life. That's, of course, what Job is about. But we, who have the full revelation of God, we know what this really means, right? God will bring every deed into judgment, whether good or evil, in eternity. So the end of the matter, fear God, keep his commandments. That will lead you to a lasting legacy. That is what will let you build something that will far outlive you. As we conclude, I think about, I don't know this person, the person that converted my grandparents. Actually, both sets of grandparents, really. Not the same person. But I think about that person, whoever it was. I'm never going to know. Well, I will know eventually, I think, in heaven. The person that converted them. Maybe he was thinking about his legacy. Maybe not. It's hard to know. I could never know that. But I think about the spiritual value that that person generated. Converting two people. Should have two of them. Who then went on to be missionaries. And it's kind of weird. It doesn't matter what set of grandparents I'm talking about. This applies to both. Went on to be missionaries. Raised faithful children. Many of whom then went on to be missionaries. Raised faithful children. That web spreading out, ripples spreading out and out and out. That person, whoever it was, laid up treasures in heaven. Thousands of treasures in heaven that he in his life could not have ever known. There's no way. But he will reap the reward, won't he? Of which I am part. That's how we build a lasting legacy.